Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments during this broadcast, you can certainly send them to me at bonkay@AOL.com. That's bonkaye@AOL.com. I just have a few short announcements before I introduce my very special guest this evening. I had written to the members of my previous newsletters who were receiving of them, which is several thousand people last week, that I'm going to be back doing a quarterly newsletter. I just don't have the time to do it every month. Nor do I have the inclination, but I certainly have more to say. So I'll be doing quarterly newsletters. So if you didn't get my note for any reason and you would like to be on the newsletter list, please just drop me a note at bonkay@AOL.com and just put on their newsletter, and I'll be happy to add you to the list. And also, as you know, we're back with our radio show, and it's really important for women to keep in touch with others. These are really scary times to start with, you know, way above normal expectation of times where people are isolated. And so people who are going through tough times to start with and now feel so isolated and alone, it's really going to be a rough patch. But there's always support out there. And never hesitate to write to me and tell me what you need, and I'll be more than happy to provide that kind of support. So without much further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest for tonight, who I feel is like an old friend because we've known each other for many years. And her name is Dolly. Dolly, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bonnie. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you here. And I really appreciate you sharing your time and your story with other listeners. We met how many years ago, do you think it was?
Well, I found you online. Right at the time, I found out that my ex-husband was gay. I had just come to that realization, and I looked online for support or any information, and I found you, and I emailed you, and what a wonderful gift you have been.
Well, I feel the same way about you. You've been so supportive and always there to help other people with support also with your story. And I think it was back in the early 2000s, maybe 2003 or 4 when we...
Yeah, he left in October of 2006. And I found out, it wasn't until December, 2 months later, that I just was beside myself those 2 months. I had to figure out what it was. And so I put two and two together, and I didn't have a lot to go on at all. But in December of 2006, so yeah, it's been a long time.
It has been. And let's just go back to that time for a few minutes because, you know, women always blame themselves. How could I not know? How didn't I see this? What was wrong? I mean, thinking somebody's gay is probably the last thing you'd even think about for a husband. Would you agree with that when we were growing up?
Oh, absolutely.
And getting married?
All along I thought, you know, all the other things, you know, you think, what could it be? You know, maybe it's another woman. But that didn't seem quite right either. But something was off. And I never thought of gay because I thought, well, what would a gay man want with a straight wife? It just didn't make sense.
Exactly. And that's why I tell women you have to forgive yourself if you didn't know, because how would we know? We were
you
always brought
yeah,
up to
you
believe,
wouldn't know.
Right?
No, you wouldn't know. He was in the Air Force at a time when he could have been dishonorably discharged. He could have lost his pension. This is a way different time then. And so he needed a cover. If he wanted to stay in the Air Force, he needed that cover so that people wouldn't suspect him being gay. And I still think, looking back, all the different times we moved, I wonder if people didn't start suspecting that, and so that's why he decided to move.
Very possibly. But he did not have a good marriage, correct?
Oh, no. Not at all. It was awful. It was just awful. He was very arrogant and self-righteous, and it got to a point once I had a couple, you know, my kids came along, I got to a point where I probably would have left him if I didn't have the kids, but I hadn't worked in years. We had been moving. I didn't have any job at all along the way, and I didn't know how to support them. So I just thought, for the sake of the kids and the, you know, he was a good provider, so at least I had that, you know, and he didn't hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids. But, you know,
well, you know what? That's
out,
another problem also, Dolly. Yeah, I think problem is that when we were growing up, when we would think about abuse, we always thought of it in terms of physical abuse, that if a guy was hitting
that
was abuse. We didn't know from emotional abuse, and we didn't know from, you know, emotional trauma that these guys put us through. I mean, that wasn't something anybody talked about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That didn't enter my mind that I was being abused. It didn't enter my mind. I knew there was something wrong with him. I thought it was psychological or some other reason like that, but I didn't think that I was being abused.
I think at that time, once again, to us, any times I remember when I was married in my early years, I didn't have a long marriage, but, you know, in the beginning of it, that I used to think, I wish my, you know, husband would hit me. You know, and I would kind of egg him on at certain points, hoping that he would hit me. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I was in such pain from him.
And people
don't
see
that. They think that you're making it up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember one time I just was so mad at him. I just laid into him, and because I was so exasperated at the way he treated me. And, you know, he did. I remember that one time he was ready to strike me, but he decided against it.
Yeah, mine never struck me either.
He lifted his arm, but then he put it down.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I would have liked that because I wanted people to see the outside bruises because they couldn't see my inside bruises.
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought that would validate me. You know, because I don't know about yours. Mine was much of a charmer. You know, he had everybody thinking how wonderful he was. And he's a great guy, and he's funny, and he's handsome.
That's all part of their MO, isn't it? I mean, they walk into a room, and they charm. And little do people know what happens at home.
Exactly. You know, and people would say to me, you're so lucky to have him for your husband, or you're so lucky that you found him. And I thought, you know, you should live one day with him and then tell me the story, because this is not who he is. But once again, we know that because we know they're actors, because they've acted throughout our whole marriage, right?
Yeah. That is what a narcissist does, is they act. Yep. And
they act, but they're also acting. They're also pretending they're straight, so they have a lot of experience in acting.
Oh, yeah. They're professionals, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and
they should get double Academy Awards, right?
Yeah, and being a manipulator, they should earn an Academy Award, is right, because they're not real people. They're hollow. There's absolutely nothing inside them. They're a black, empty space inside. They have no emotions. They have no empathy. They have nothing inside. Matter of fact, if you look at their eyes when they're in a rage, they seem to turn black. They seem to turn black.
One of the things that moved me most with you, because you wrote for one of our Straight Wives books, was the story about the blueberries. Could you tell people that story?
Oh, my goodness. Well, he, as they usually do, they love to create drama and turn your life upside down, and whatever they can do to cause that drama and grief in your life, they're right there. And years before the blueberry farm, he was in Amway, and he was in it lock, stock, and barrel, and he had to go to all their conventions, and they were... He had to drive out of state to get to them, and he even bought a van for that. It was just mental torture is what it is. He had two little kids, and he dragged me all over for those stupid Amway conventions and all that. It was almost like, okay, that didn't work. What else can I do to torment her? So he decided, there were a couple things in between, but then came the blueberry farm. So he decided that he would buy a five and a half acre farm on this river in Washington State. Neither one of us knew anyone in this small town. It was just like he picked a place and wanted to a blueberry farm, because he was really into, you know, taking tax credits. And so if he had this farm, he could take a lot of deductions. And so he turned it into a blueberry farm, because I guess that's easier than having animals to care for. So it's blueberry farm. So he planted, I don't know, 400 or 500 blueberry plants. And he commuted to work like a 3-hour drive, and was gone for like 4 days. He shared a room in Seattle, and then drove home on just the weekends, and he would come home on the weekends and mow the grass or something, and then he'd leave again. And I was like, what are we doing here? And in the meantime, he wanted me to water his blueberries. Well, the blueberry field was huge. We had multiple 100-foot hoses all screwed together, and he wanted me to drag all, well, you know what a hose is, a 100-foot hose when it's wet, it's heavy. And I had like three of those all strung together, and I had to go through and water his blueberry bushes like every other day, every day in the summer. And I just got so sick and tired of one day I just told him when I was done, I said, next year, I said, if you don't set up an automatic watering system, your blueberries are going to die.
What happened?
He did. He set up something, but it was still not nice. You know, I still had to do a lot of work to get it going. So I just quit altogether. I just quit. And I think that was the straw that he decided to just divorce me. Because I wouldn't play by what he wanted me to do.
But he never told you about the gay end of him, right? The gay part of his life.
No. I asked him. You know, I had a friend. When we were in Saudi Arabia, I had a colonel's wife that we kind of chatted, you know, and she thought he was gay. And she kind of saw his mannerisms. And she said they especially came out after the kids and I left Saudi. She was still there. That's when they evacuated the military families because the bombs went off. But he had to stay there. So she said those mannerisms came out more after the kids and I left. And so she kind of thought. So she knew me for a while. And after he left me, the first question she said, ask him if he's gay. And I said, okay, I did. So I did. And he lied. As a matter of fact, you know how he answered it? Ha, no. Yeah. And so I told her, I said, he said no. She says, he's lying. I go, really? Really? So she was the first one that even put the thought in my head. So then I started.
Once you put it in your head, once you put that idea in your head, did you start wondering maybe there are things that could have been the case?
Yeah. At least I started thinking. I was taking a computer class and learning how to just make a basic table. And so at the time he had all of his Verizon statements sent by email. To him,
mm-hmm.
He paid the bill by email, and so I just thought, well, I'm going to start if I can looking at the phone records. So I called Verizon and I asked to have a hard copy of the last 3 months' phone records. So I went through them, and I found a couple numbers that he had been calling. So, yeah, I made a table of the duration, the time and duration of the call and all that. So I emailed it to my brother and my friends, and I said, asked them, I said, what do you think? And I still remember my brother's reply, and he says, what else could it be? Because at first I thought it was another woman, but this number that he called a lot, I called it, and it was a guy who answered, and he said, hi, my name is, or he is, hi, this is Stephen. And I go, that's odd for him to be calling. Maybe I know he has friends that he works with. You know, I know he calls them once in a while. But just the time of day, it was like a Sunday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. I thought, what's he calling a colleague for at this time? So I got answers back by email from my table I had assembled. And, yeah, my brother said, what else could it be?
So then he officially admitted,
my friend from Saudi, she says he's lying, you know. And so what I did was I confronted him that one day. I said, I took it as if it were true, because I was done asking him because I knew he would just lie. So how I worded it was, so how long have you and Stephen been together?
Uh-huh.
That's how I worded it. Because I didn't need to ask him, are you gay again? Because I know what he'd say. So
right.
Since I worded it that way, how long have you and Stephen been together? He answered me, none of your business.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And that's your confirmation,
yep.
Right?
That was my confirmation.
So all these years later, is he living an openly gay life now?
Yeah. He had to, actually, because he was working for Boeing on the military side. He had to have a top secret government clearance.
Uh-huh.
And Secret Investigative Services, OPM, called me one day and chatted, and they said, well, you know, he's not open. I said, no, he's not open. His family don't know it, and his friends don't know it. And I found him out. So they said, well, we have one concern about that, in that if he holds a top secret government clearance, which is a big deal, then he can't have anything that could possibly be a blackmail, be in a position for blackmail. So they basically told him that if he didn't come out of his closet, then he would basically lose his job, because they would take away his top secret clearance, and so he had to have that for his job. So he was forced to come out.
How did they find that out, Dolly? Did they already know it by the time they called you?
I think I knew his boss. I called his boss and told his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the boss knew. And the boss, of course, knew that he had a top secret clearance. So I think I started things rolling that way.
Well, thanks to you, he had to come out. So
yeah,
you know, sure, he didn't feel like living secret forever either. But the point is that when he left, I mean, was he kind to you when he was leaving, or did he try to reconcile anything?
Well, another thing narcissists do is they will never admit they had any wrongdoing whatsoever. It's never their fault. So you will never get an apology out of them. Don't even think you will. Don't even ever think they will ever feel sorry for what they put you through. It won't happen, because they don't feel anything. You know what they feel? They feel whatever they did to you, they're justified, and they don't have any grief over it, just like they walked across the street. That's as much as they feel.
Well, that's true. If anything, they feel, and it's really sad, because when I work with gay men, you know, on their coming out issues, which I work with several hundred each year, but it's really sad to me when I hear the stories that they tell me, because in their own mind, how they think that they were good husbands, and they think they were good husbands based on the fact that I paid the rent, you know, I provided food on the table, I didn't leave until my kids were older, and, you know, we were so different anyway, it wouldn't have worked. You know, they're missing, like, the whole point. The reason why your marriage failed is because you're a gay man. But that never even, you know, that doesn't even strike them. They feel like they did their best, and you were a failure as a wife. Or they wouldn't have had those feelings, or they wouldn't have needed to act on those feelings.
Yeah.
And when they think that, I send them somewhere else. I can't deal with that whole issue. I mean, I refuse.
Yeah.
They can't even see what the truth is. They're wasting their time with me, because I'm not going to make them feel any better, because I'm going to tell them the truth. You know, it's because you are a gay man who doesn't belong in a straight marriage. Because trust me, they don't treat their boyfriends the same way they treat us.
No.
Although,
and
I don't know why.
And I don't know why it was, but when he told me he wanted a divorce, it was like somebody punched me in the stomach and then ripped my heart out all at the same time. And all I wanted from him, I remember this one time he came in the house after we were deciding to divorce. All I wanted to know was why. Why didn't he tell me? And he ignored me, and he walked around me. And I I got in front of him. I asked him the question again. And I was looking at him, but he would not make eye contact with me. It was like I wasn't even a person. And he again walked around me. I said, for the third time, I went over and I asked him, I want to know why. That's all I want. I want to know why you didn't tell me. And for the third time, he walked around me, and then he went out the door, and he was going to get some firewood. He was going to make a fire. And on the way out, I couldn't help myself, Bonnie. I gave him a shove out the door.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a shove.
How was he as a father when the kids were growing up?
He was okay to our daughter. He tried to be verbally abusive to her, but she wouldn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had an understanding that he didn't do that to her, but he did to my son. And when we lived on the farm, we had this huge barn, like a pole barn, even bigger. And he had his workshop in there and a boat and an RV and I don't know what kind of all the goodies he liked. And so anyways, a big place. And he hung out there a lot because he didn't want to be in the house with me. And my son, he would ask my son to help him do farm duties. And so my son was out and he worked with him. He had him do farm duties like one day all day long. And all my son asked him to do was play a board game when he was
uh-huh.
done in the evening, and which he agreed to. And then at like 8 o'clock in the evening, after the full day of work, my son says to him, "Okay, you're ready for the board game?" And evidently he thought they should do more work. And he said, "No, we're not done." And I wasn't there, but I know he verbally abused my son because my son came in tears. He was so upset. And, of course, I wasn't there. I was in the house. I just saw my son upset. And I asked him, "What is the matter? What happened?" And he wouldn't tell me. And so I was so frustrated because I felt awful. My son's here crying. I don't know why. He won't tell me. And come to find out, he was being verbally abused out in that shop. And that wasn't the first time.
And I think it's unusual.
All through growing up, he had no time for him. Only criticism. Oh, he plays his video games too much. And I said, what else has he got to do? Doesn't have anything to do. So why let him play his video games as long as he got his homework done? And he had friends, too, that came over and played. But, I mean, it was always constant criticism. And he's never spent any time with him at all. So that was frustrating.
I think that a lot of time these guys have a hard time making a connection to their children. Not every time. I've met some wonderful gay fathers, but I've met so many more that just don't make that connection to their kids. You know, they don't have
no,
that emotional connection.
Again, that's the whole definition of a narcissist, isn't it? They don't have emotions. They don't feel emotions. They don't know how they can act. They're good actors. They can act like they have emotions, but they don't feel anything. Yeah.
The only thing they feel is trapped. That's what they keep telling me. They feel trapped.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you did for me recently, Dolly, is that you sent me some wonderful, wonderful quotes from Dr. Phil from his Life Code. Is that the name of the book, Life Code?
Yeah. That was a really good book. And what Dr. Phil, without even saying narcissist, he described the narcissist precisely. And he just, when I was growing up, I went to Catholic grade school and high school. It was ingrained in me to have compassion and empathy for others. I am here to serve others. That should be in our heart, and to learn after. They never taught me that there's cruel people that don't think that way. And I got out of high school and thinking that everybody else thought the same way. And once I married him, it's like, wow, there's a lot of people don't think that way. They think of you as a target. That's all. And they would just as soon destroy you as look at you.
In retrospect, when you look back, I think you've mentioned to me that when you look back now, that you don't believe that at any time your husband loved you. Is that true?
Oh, he told me so. No, and I didn't feel it either. Matter of fact, I think I told you about my son. His grandmother, my ex-husband's mom, was visiting, and my son was only in grade school, younger grade school, too. And just out of the blue, he says to her, "My mama loves me." And it was one of those moments where you just kind of stop and think, and then she said to him, "Well, your daddy loves you too." Then I stopped and thought again, well, I don't think he feels it. I know I don't feel it. So it was like, it's one of those moments where you will never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it just took a lot of processing to internalize the thought. That, yeah, it's real. It's real. He feels unloved, and I feel unloved. And he was able to voice it to his mom.
And I think that's wonderful that you could express that, because I think that a lot of times people don't realize what that feeling of emptiness and loneliness is. And I always say that you can feel much more lonely living with someone than you can by living by yourself. If you're living with someone who's ignoring you and someone who's, you know, minimizing you and who's knocking you down, that's the loneliest feeling in the world. You have no support from the person who's supposed to love you.
That's
and
right.
That's not what
I know. And my parents died when my daughter was less than 2 years old. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was sometime after that I really wanted to leave them. And I thought, you know, if my parents were alive, I would have. I would have gone to live with them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But sometimes we just get ourselves into situations that we just are unable to overcome for a while. And that's why I always tell women, you don't have to rush through this. You take the time you need to leave at the pace you need to leave. But you have to recognize that you need to leave. You can't just spend your life living with a man who cannot appreciate you, who robs you of your self-esteem, your sexual esteem, you know, your value as a woman, as a mother, as a wife. I mean, that is not what you call marriage. Just because you're in the same place with a ring on your finger does not make it a marriage. You know, there has to be bond of, you know, emotional connection that a person's there for you. I mean, that's the whole point of being in a relationship. That partner has to be there for you, or otherwise it's not a partnership, right?
That's right. That's right. It wasn't anything like a partnership.
Let's talk about some of Dr. Phil's quotes, and you can tell me how you feel about them as far as relating, because I saw a couple here that I really thought, wow, that was like, and I love Dr. Phil in many ways. In fact, I used to be a resource for him on his website for women who were going through this a number of years ago. And his show asked me if I could be one of their resources, and I said, absolutely.
The Life Code book he wrote was so good. He actually did some research, but he could never find the answer to why these people operate the way they do. Go ahead.
Here's one quote he said that reminded me about, you know, your situation. He says, "As I say, this kind of dysfunction is on a continuum. Maybe your baiter wasn't that extreme and violent, but they still inflicted pain and disruption in your life. They betrayed your trust, stole your money, took credit for your work, abused you mentally, emotionally, or physically, controlled, dominated, and isolated you, alienated your friends or exploited your kindness and goodwill. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He alienated me from my friends and family big time. He never had anything kind to say to them about them at all. And when they were around, he ignored them. But
mine,
you know what's interesting, with the points that he brought up and other points in this book, is it's not just our gay husbands, you know, that we have to watch out for. It's a real estate agent. It's a contractor. You know, they're out to, they see you as a target for, they want to get money out of you. And they don't see you as a person. And it's up to us now to be able to know that other people don't think like we do. It's not a give and take. You know, I think of a give and take and a personality, you know, this personality meets that personality and all that. But no, these are just cold-hearted people. They have no personality. They have nothing inside. They see you as a target, and they know what they want. And it doesn't
but
matter
able
if
to
it's
fool
a game.
You
husband,
but they're able to fool you also.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They may have nothing inside, but they know how to charm you. They know how to get you hooked into them, right?
Yeah, and you know how they get you hooked into them? They find out what your value system is, and they play you on it. Like if your values are family or God or whatever it may be, they play right into that for the hook. And then later, they use that against you when they start demeaning you.
Exactly. They throw it in your face, everything that, you know, you've told them, making you feel really, you know, stupid that you could even, you know, I live that whole treatment all the time. So
yeah.
I can definitely sympathize with that. One of the things he taught me, Dr. Phil, which I thought was really great a couple of years ago when I read it, it was about addiction to chaos. And
yeah.
I've never heard it quite termed that way before. But, you know, my ex-husband was very, very always creating chaos. I always used to say he could never have one calm day without conflict. He'd have to start conflict with somebody. And
yeah.
I thought that was so unusual. But when I read it from Dr. Phil, it says, while most people try to avoid drama, research shows that others have figured out how to trigger the body's stress response just for the rush. Take the test
yeah.
to find out if you're creating chaos in your everyday life. So here are some of the
yeah.
questions he asked, because I could pinpoint my husband to these, my ex-husband. It says, answer true or false. Do you usually yell and scream to make your point, which mine did. Did yours?
Oh, absolutely. That was little temper tantrums. Oh, and then where's this? Every day he came home and, what'd you do with this? I know you did something with this. Where is it? And I didn't have any clue. I said, if you want it, then you put it somewhere where you know it is. Oh, it was always that, almost on a daily basis.
Do you ramp things up to win every argument? If you get sick, do you feel that everyone should know about it? Mine had to tell everybody all the time. You could never have a sick day alone. You know, like if my back was bad, his back was worse. If, you know, my kids were sick, he'd be sicker. He could just never let you have a sick day without him being sicker. When you argue, do you break things or knock them over? Well, mine didn't do that. But, you know, does being calm or bored sound like the word? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, mine didn't break things, but he would slam things. Like in the kitchen, the dishwasher, he'd slam that closed, or cupboards slam closed, doors slam closed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always like had to be something angry going on in the house.
Yeah.
You ever yell at strangers that if you feel they're in your way? Do you hate when you are not the center of attention? Mine had to be the center of attention wherever he went.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't, if mine wasn't the center, he'd make himself the center and not whoever else was getting any attention.
Yeah.
Is there usually a crisis to solve in your life? Well, yes, because he created them all. And are you the one who starts the fights? The answer was yes, he did.
Yeah.
So,
nothing.
Everything had to be chaotic.
Yeah. And the things that they would choose to fight over would be just trivial things, like stupid things.
Mm-hmm. So they're there just to knock you down.
Yeah, here's another quote I like from that book. He says, "I guess a lot of things in life boil down to the war of good versus evil, and your life and mine are often the battleground."
That's very
true.
He also wrote from that, they need drama to feel alive, so they create it. They stir things up and love to see everyone getting upset. Drama and crisis are currency to them because they love the power to make people react. They thrive on a good fight, a good scandal, a good drama. They're very angry and arrogant, which shows just below the surface. They have low tolerance for frustration, a low threshold for engaging in aggression, and poor impulse control. That was my ex-husband, exactly.
Yeah, and another quote, "The real truth is that much of what we were all taught is not so much how the world really works as how the world should work." So that was my frame of mind. I just thought, when growing up and being taught, you know, how to be kind to others, that I thought that's how the world works. But it doesn't. It's how the world should work, but it doesn't.
Another good thing he says is that in addition to learning to listen to your instincts, which I don't think we do, you are now equipped with beta radar, sensitized to these identifiers that make these dangerous people much easier to detect in your life before they can sink their fangs into you. Simply by doing some homework.
We're so willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt, and our instincts and our gut is screaming at us, but our mind is telling us, no, we have to give them the benefit of the doubt, because back to our own nature, you know, it's back to my own heartfelt nature. I give a person the benefit of the doubt, and that's what we really have to be careful of. If you have a gut, if your gut is screaming at you, you pay attention to your gut, not your head.
I think that, in all fairness, though, Dolly, to be honest with you, that it's easier today to see things, not totally easy, easier than when we were growing up because we didn't have knowledge, we didn't have computers, we didn't have the correct information on this. But even today, I spoke to a young lady yesterday who was very upset, so I told her I'll be happy to talk to her. And she's only 31. She said she's had three different relationships where there have been sexual problems with the guy. You know, they started out being real charming and nice to her, but then all of a sudden it becomes something different. And, you know, she didn't have long-term relationships with them, and she thought there's something really wrong with her and likes to know where she went wrong. But I said to her, you know what, when I look back on my life, when I was younger, before I even met my gay husband, I've been with some gay guys, but I didn't understand gay. You know, so I thought, well, if you love them enough, I won't be gay anymore. But I think what it is, and I explained to her, I think age goes against you. Because when you're younger, people like these gay men who are younger, they don't want to come to terms with who they are. You know, this way they can have a show woman to show that they're really not gay and do their own thing on the side. Then, you know, they don't have to feel they're gay. And I said, a lot of it is just your age. You know, now at our age, as we get older, or once you hit, you know, your 50s or 60s, then you realize that sometimes you have to do a little more research before you just jump into something with someone. And especially after these experiences.
Now you can find out an awful lot online where, you know, 30 years ago or more, you know, that wasn't available.
No, it wasn't at all. In fact, I always tell the story that was me when I was on, my marriage had just split up, and I felt so isolated and so alone. If there were no computers, who was I going to talk to about a gay husband? You know, you didn't want people to know this because you're embarrassed by it, the fact that, you know, people would question you. He wasn't gay when he married you. Why is he gay now? What did you do to make him gay?
I never experienced that. Once I found him out, it was like a total betrayal. And it was, that's how I looked at it, is I trusted him and he betrayed me. I didn't really feel anything that I had done wrong because he fooled me. He was a fraud. And
right,
if he could fool the Air Force for over 20 years, and he got to be a lieutenant colonel, and if he could fool the Air Force for all that time, then I didn't feel bad that he fooled me, because he was just such a actor, manipulator.
Yeah.
That no, I put it all on him. I had no regrets on what my path was.
Yeah, but the other
so
thing
mad.
Also is you found out 20 years later than I found out. So when I found out back in the early 80s, you know, there was no help, there was no support, and there was no computer. So you really thought you were totally, by yourself.
And you thought you were
so
the
little.
Only one experiencing it, probably, huh? You probably thought you were totally alone in that. No, you were the only one that's happened to, probably.
Well, I did, up until the point where shortly after my marriage, I was standing in line at the supermarket, and there was an article in one of these magazines, like Women's Day, and it was by a woman named Kiki Olson, I'll never forget, back in 1982, and 6 women who married gay men. And I, like, froze online, because it was just a couple months after I, you know, broken up my marriage, and I grabbed that magazine, and I ran home, and I read it. And I felt so validated that there were 6 more women besides me who had gay husbands. But that's how isolating it felt in the beginning, until I started my own support group shortly thereafter and saw how many there really were. But
what happened is I was watching Oprah back when Oprah was on, and she had a guest, and they were talking about women, straight women married to gay men. And my ex-husband was around. He was walking through the room at the time. And I'm just as dumb can be. I didn't even think anything about it. I just watched the show. And, you know, right after that, he went outside. We had a sliding door. He went outside, got on his phone. I bet you he had something to say about it.
Well, like I say, the climate has changed drastically. And I think people used to feel a little more sympathetic than they feel today. Today, I don't think people feel sympathetic with us at all. And that's my personal feeling. I feel that women haven't achieved what they needed to in this whole situation of being recognized as being the victims instead of the men being the victims. Because now society has changed so much, right?
Yeah. Well, it's all PC now. Everything is so PC that they have lost sight of what is right. Sometimes it's like these guys that were born men, but then they decided to be women, and then they compete in sports against other women, and they can't say anything about it, because you got to be on the PC about it. Well, what's right is right. I mean, I don't know, I'm frustrated with that movement, that's for sure.
Me too.
I feel like
our women never got what they're supposed to get. That years of our lives have been taken away from us. They're years that will never be returned. And on top of it, when they leave us financially strapped in most cases, so that we have to lose the houses that we had when we were married. Many of our women have to first, switch professions, jobs. You know, people live a certain way for 20, 25 years, and boom, it's over.
Yeah.
Through no fault of their own,
after
being beaten down for all these years.
Well, blueberry farm. When he left me, the following fall, the farm was completely flooded. And I was there, just me and my son, on all those acres. And I had to call the firemen out to... they brought a tanker to evacuate us off the property while the property was being flooded. And then I had to come back to all that mud and then have to move. And of course, he was jolly on his way with his boyfriend in Oregon by then, so he didn't have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. You set up a mess that you had to deal with.
Yeah. They don't care.
Not only don't they care, but they get some sort of satisfaction out of seeing us suffer in many cases.
Oh, I think all the time. I think that's their main goal.
For many of these men, you know, but I think this is what it is when you have a personality disorder and you're living a lie your whole life, and then you just compile the life when you get married. And, you know, it's just like I say, it's such behavior deviances here. And that's certainly not a reflection on gay people, because a lot of gay people are just as much against this as we are. You know, they also say it's not a good thing for this to happen, and they, you know, hold people responsible. But, you know, obviously the men who get married or the men who go out with our married husbands, you know, they're not thinking along those lines.
No. Well, no, I don't have anything against gay people in general, but I think the narcissist gays are the ones who will marry straight women and hide it because they are narcissists. Not, and it's, you have to do a mind shift. The point is not that they're gay. The point is that they're narcissists, and they will do that to somebody else and ruin their lives, and they don't care. That's a totally different issue than just being gay. I'm not slamming gays. I'm slamming the narcissistic gay person who marries and destroys someone else's life. That's
exactly. I don't want to hear how they're victims. I mean, they didn't have to sit and victimize us. There are those gay men who also had the same choices to make and decided not to, you know, go with a woman.
Yeah.
Because they realized that it was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
So there is a difference between gay married men and gay men who don't marry.
Yeah.
I think in almost all cases, the gay married men, you know, you have to center on yourself to be able to pull off these marriages.
Yeah.
So I think your needs are always more important than anybody else's needs, right?
Yeah.
And yet so many of them still think they were good husbands.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole mindset of the narcissist, isn't it? Because they don't think like they would see what we have to do is the whole it's a mind thing. We can't think that other people think like we do. Narcissists don't. They don't think anything like us. As a matter of fact, it's evil. If you think there's good in people, then you know that there's going to be evil in people, and narcissists are evil. They are dark holes. And I don't care if they're gay or straight or whatever, but that's the root of the whole thing, the narcissism.
And the problem is there's no cure for it. In other words, it's not an illness that can be cured.
They can't even, counselors won't even take them because what they end up doing is manipulating the counselor. Because they don't have any self-reflection. They can't there's nothing inside of them. There's just nothing there to talk about because they're empty. It's all
Or when they go to marriage counseling, did your husband ever suggest marriage counseling to you?
No, I did, and we tried it a couple times, but, you know, of course, how that would go. Didn't do anything.
Because they can't hear anything negative about themselves.
No.
Right?
And then besides that, it's hard to find a good counselor anyway. I had tried two, and neither one of them were any good.
Well, I always say, unless you're really familiar with this subject, it's really going to be hard to do counseling with people going through it. Because you just don't know all the layers and, you know, the deceit that you have to wade through. And plus, the husband's there giving a wrong story. He's telling his side of a story that doesn't even exist.
Exactly.
Not the gay part. That part he won't let out. But everything else in his head that he's made up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, they believe their own lies. They're so good at lying, they actually believe their own lies.
So, in conclusion, because believe it or not, we're actually coming to the end of this hour so fast. Can you give any good advice to women who are in relationships?
If you are in a straight gay relationship, get out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you would rather live under a bridge than with that person another moment. When you do leave, I don't know what to say. It's like just no contact. And they will try, sometimes they'll try to get you back, and they'll be good for a while, and then it turns sour every time. Every time they'll try to get you back, and then you come back, and you think everything's going to be fine, and then they go into their own pattern. And you know what? That pattern never changes. So get out, no contact.
Yes. I mean, you don't have to worry about children and other commitments. Then it's time to move on. I mean, somebody who's gay and has been married to you and cheating on you and bringing home diseases to you is really not your best friend, no matter what you want to think.
No. Oh, they're not even your friend. No, they're not even your friend. They want nothing more than to destroy you.
And a lot of times they come back and try to, you know, tell us their love problems with their boyfriends. You don't have to listen to that either. You know, it's hurtful and it's painful, and you're not their therapist. You're not their psychologist. You're their ex-wife, right?
Well, he tried, before he left, he at least got some kind of, he thought he was going to emote some kind of emotion out of me, but he was wrong because I got smart to his manipulations finally. And he said, well, when I was growing up, I had a real bad childhood. And I said, oh, is that why you're so cynical now?
What did he say?
Nothing. He never said anything. That's another thing. They'll never engage you in a normal conversation. They'll ignore you. If you say something they don't like, they'll just ignore you and end the conversation, which never started anyway, because there's never a give and take with them anyway.
No, it's all take. It's like whenever we want to go to the movies, it was his movie that he wanted to see. It was never my choice. It was always his choice. We went out to dinner, it was his choice, not my choice. It was never, where should we have dinner tonight? This is where we're going to have dinner tonight. So,
they don't make choices.
They
make all the decisions,
And did yours control the money in your family?
Pardon?
Yours control the money?
We're financially abused too, because I had no say in the money. I had no say in the insurance. I had no say in the money at all, ever.
Yep, I haven't had none either. I got a dollar if I needed a dollar.
Yeah, and all the stuff that he bought, you know, that speedboat, the fifth wheel, a car every year, the timeshares, and those were a headache, and I hated those things. And you know, it's all monetary with them. They have to fill that void that's so empty inside them.
Uh-huh.
And you know, by buying things, they try to stuff all that inside of them, but it never works.
Yes, exactly. Well, Dolly, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It was wonderful to get to talk to you. And I'm sure your insight will help many women. Just look ahead. Look at the red flags when they're waving in your face. Don't ignore them. And everyone have a wonderful night. Try to stay safe. Terrible thing that we're going through in this country right now. But we will stay strong, and we will endure this and overcome it. Hopefully soon, right?
Yeah. So, hugs to everybody.
All right, everybody. Love you. Yeah, here's a big distance hug to you, Dolly. and thanks so much for being part of this network for so long. I really appreciate it. You're more than a member.
Dolly.
You're a friend. All right, love
you're
you.
Welcome,
and everyone, have a wonderful week. Good night.
Good night. Love you, too.